Looking at the gospel this weekend, I thanked God for the providence of it all, because this is the perfect gospel for where we find ourselves. It's a confusing gospel, and in fact, the way the church presents it to us, it's kind of cut away the parts that are most confusing, probably to make things easier for the preacher, but we're going to expand it. We're going to go right to the part that actually is really confusing, because it opens up the whole of the scriptures and allows them to speak to our hearts. So the passage that's cut out is that one that we've probably heard before and that's confused us, where Jesus has said all of this, and then he says that this generation won't pass away until these things come to pass. And so we go, well, was Jesus wrong? And I know it would actually delight Father Conway and our back and forth about C.S. Lewis to admit that here is one place where I will admit that C.S. Lewis got it wrong. C.S. Lewis said, well, maybe there are some things like the coming of Christ at the end of time that the Father kept from the Son. It's wrong. He's wrong. That line about that generation not passing away until all these things come to pass, the signs and the sun, the moon, the stars, the nations on earth being in dismay, the roaring of the seas and the waves, all of this imagery is about something very specific, something very particular, which was the temple in Jerusalem. The temple in Jerusalem was set up in such a way that it presented one orderly part of the universe, that if humanity had lost all of that order in the fall, the temple could be the one place where there was some semblance of order, some reflection of the way that things were supposed to have been in the garden. You even have the historian who came just a little bit, a couple of decades after Jesus, Josephus was his name. He wrote to the Romans explaining Judaism to them, and he explains the temple, its decorations, the implements that they used, the candlesticks, the sacrificial items, all of it. He said, this is to present sort of the cosmic reality of God redeeming the universe. This is what the people listening to Jesus would have understood, that he was not talking about the physical universe, time and space, the solar system, these things coming to an end, not directly. He was speaking of the temple in a way that was chastising it, that was challenging it, that was upending it. For them, for Jesus' people, that was a point of stability for them. Sure, we may be occupied by the Romans, but at least we have the temple. There, at least, everything is in right order before God. And Jesus is saying it won't be that way within a generation. And then, to make things even worse, all the nations on earth will be in dismay. Jesus is born at a time in history that's called the Pax Romana, the Roman peace. The Romans, for all of their violence in conquering so much of the known world, did bring peace, unity. And so it's unthinkable to think that some great upheaval is going to happen. Who could threaten Rome itself? And yet Jesus is saying even that will be upended. And it's going to happen within a generation. And sure enough, it does. Within 30 years of Jesus saying these words, the Roman Empire is sick of dealing with the rebellions in Israel and so comes to Jerusalem with an army. And the Roman general who was in charge wrote in his notes leading up to it that he was going to take the temple and make sure that there was not a single stone left on another stone as a testament to the might of Rome and to ultimately quash any thoughts of rebellion among the people ever again. And so what we have now that we call the Wailing Wall, that's just a retaining wall of the mount that the temple sat on, meant to be a kind of mockery left and a testament to the power that Rome had. And yet not long after this, Rome begins its decline as well. Jesus' words are proven true, that all of the things that people may have said, I can put my faith in that, I can trust that, this won't change, it all was going to fall apart. And so it's not hard for us to see where there's an inroad for our own hearts in these words. Because what seemed sturdy and certain and safe a week ago isn't there, has been rocked. Maybe feels like it's been torn apart. Our universe has been upended. And so in that, with all of those realities, distressing realities, laid bare by Jesus, what does he tell his disciples to do? Stand erect and raise your heads, because your redemption is at hand. He says that his words are not going to pass away, even if heaven and earth pass away. He says to look up, to look to the Son of Man as the singular source of stability in all of that. In fact, historically, it's recorded that when Rome began to close in on Jerusalem, the Christians of the day recognized Jesus' words here in Luke's gospel, and they did what he says at another point. They fled into the hill country, and they survived. We're invited to attend to Jesus' words, to fix our eyes on the Son of Man. And he talks about the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. But we know where the Son of Man went first, which was to the cross. That is the first throne that he sat on, to bring his infinite love to the place of death, the thing that would seem to consume all else. And he brings love to it. And it's from that love is shown to be stronger than death. But it's there. And when we hear him say to stand erect and raise our heads, to look on the Son of Man, we know that when he is on that throne on Good Friday, that it's Our Lady, St. John, who are there, who are able to do that. Pope Benedict, in reflecting on the Beatitude, blessed are those who mourn, says that Mary and St. John show to us what to do in our sorrow. In our sense of powerlessness and grief, to look upon the Son of Man. And he says, by doing so, John and Mary become a window by which hope enters the world, in a line past which evil cannot go. We're invited to be embraced by them, to imitate them looking upon the Son of Man. And Jesus, even when he rises triumphant over sin and death, doesn't get rid of his wounds. He could have, of course, but he keeps them. Because until he definitively comes again, he knows we will bear our own wounds. And as a very wise priest who taught me through the course of my spiritual direction training said, sometimes the only way that we can pray is by resting our wounds against the wounds of Jesus. Perhaps that's a model for us in the days, the weeks, the months ahead. I don't have to say anything. I don't have to make it make sense. I don't have to magically hold it all together to keep things from falling apart. I will go to the one who has already gone to the place of death and destruction, and rest my wounds against his. Yet Jesus in his goodness is even more than that, invites us to even more. One of the early bishops, reflecting on the connection between Jesus and the temple, looks at the tearing of the veil in the temple upon Jesus' death, right? The opening of the outer court and the Holy of Holies, the truth that there is no distance between God and man. And he sees a parallel in the soldier piercing our Lord's side, wounding his side. He says, he has broken down the wall of the temple, and I reach in and find my treasure. Jesus doesn't just ask us to rest our wounds against his, but he says, take hold of my heart. Here is the thing that when the sun, the moon, the stars, when the nations of the earth, when everything else falls apart, this remains. This is the source of the love that is stronger than death. Cling to this. Cling to me. And so we see Jesus' generosity, not just giving us the image of the crucifix, not just giving us his words of promise in Scripture, but giving us himself in the Eucharist, where he does say for us to take hold of him, to take him into ourselves as our treasure. And if all we can do is collapse there in that embrace that the Lord invites us to, then that is enough. When he says at the end of this gospel to be vigilant, to pray that we have the strength, it isn't a call to lift ourselves up by our own spiritual bootstraps. It is a call to allow ourselves to be nurtured and cared for by Christ himself. To let that love that is stronger than death come to the wounds where death has stung us. And to lead us into that mystery that will recreate all things. That truth that love indeed has triumphed and will. So as we go through the days ahead, it's good we find ourselves in Advent, where we are able to be perhaps more in touch with our longing and the wounds that are there around that longing. And we can hear the words of Jesus to raise up our heads, to be with Mary, to be with John, to be with all the saints who have gone before us, to fix our eyes on Jesus, on his open side, on the heart that is the source of that love that has overcome death, that will carry us through, heart that makes all things new. So as we draw close to Jesus in the Eucharist, today and for as long as we need, may we take hold and find in him our treasure and the love that is stronger than death. I invite you to be seated. I promise I'm not going to preach another long homily. Father Conway's funeral arrangements have been finalized, so the visitation will be this coming Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. at All Saints Parish here in town. It's Father Conway's home parish. There'll be a vigil service then at 7 p.m. Then the funeral, the Mass of Christian Burial, will be at 11 a.m. on Friday morning. So please consider taking time to be at one or both of those events to pray certainly for Father Conway's happy repose, to offer consolation to his family, to offer consolation to one another as well. Priest funerals are very beautiful things, can be very healing as well. Just to say very simply, I don't know what comes next, and the Archdiocese does not yet either. The priority was making sure that you were taken care of this weekend and making sure that Father Conway's funeral arrangements were figured out. So, now that that has taken place, I think the Archbishop and Father Nick March, as the Dean of the Cedar Rapids Deanery, are going to begin working on What do things look like going forward? So simply pray for the Archbishop, for Father March. There is no roadmap for something like this, but you are in very, very good hands with both of them. They love you. They care about you immensely. They care about these communities and making sure that they are provided for. So it'll be a matter of patience and waiting for them to figure out what the answer is as well. So the best that we can do is continue praying for them and praying for one another. I want to thank you very much for your concern for me that you've expressed in so many ways. I am doing as well as can be expected. So just to let everyone know that, you know, I'm staying with my parents at least until the funeral. I am, you know, making sure that I'm doing all the stuff to take care of myself. My spiritual director came down at dinner with me. Got a couple of counseling appointments scheduled for myself for next week. I'm doing everything that I can to make sure that I'm able to love others as well. And so if I haven't had a chance to thank you responding to your text messages, your emails, your phone calls, it's just because my emotional bandwidth comes and goes like it probably does for all of us. So know that I'm deeply grateful for it and that eventually I will be able to respond to everything. But thank you for your prayers and for your love. And I know people have said, oh, thank you so much for coming and covering masses. I needed this too. So as much I express my gratitude to you also. Please make sure to take advantage of the services that Catholic Charities are offering for parishioners of Father Conway. So the details on that, I think, are available on the IC Facebook page and St. Wenceslaus' Facebook page. It may be on the website. Certainly, if you have questions, contact the office. But there is absolutely no shame in seeking help, seeking someone to walk with. There is no shame, and in fact, it's many times a very good thing to do. So please don't deprive yourself of that. Also, this is nobody's fault here. This is not your fault. You loved Father Conway and myself very, very well. You didn't miss something. You didn't fail him. You loved him. And we continue loving him. But free yourself from the lie that somehow, if only something had been different or whatever, that this is not your fault. And so receive the Lord's kindness in that. We don't want one singular moment to be the thing that defines Father Conway's priesthood. He was a very, very good priest. And all of us are able to, I think, speak of how he brought Jesus to our souls. I'm not saying to ignore the grief. Please let Jesus come close to you in that. But also, don't let the last moment in this side of eternity define or overshadow everything else of the life of a good and faithful priest. So continue to receive and unfold those gifts that he gave to lead each of you close to Jesus. Save those up, go back to them for yourself, share them with his family, share them with one another. These are gifts that God has given, and we want to be able to honor the gifts that God gave through Father Conway's priesthood. So we'll continue praying for one another as we go through these days. The closing hymn is going to be the Salve Regina. I'll intone it and then just please join in. It's a tradition in the Archdiocese of Dubuque that as a priest's body is taken from the church to the hearse, and then also as the priest is laid to rest at his final resting place, the priests of the diocese will sing the Salve Regina. So it's a beautiful way of asking Our Lady's intercession for Father Conway's soul and the consolation of his family, as well as for one another's consolation. So that'll be our closing hymn today in just a few moments. Salve Regina, Mater Misericordiae, Vita Dulcedo, et Spes Nostra Salve. Ad te clamamus, exules filii Eve, ad te suspiramus,
Gementes et plentes in hac lacrimarum vale. Ea ergo advocata nostra illos tuos misericordes.